support for FunDrive helps our radio station in innumerable ways. This year, we launched an awesome new CGSF radio app to make our live broadcast and your favorite programs even easier to listen to. Anytime, anywhere. Your support helps make projects like this happen and succeed. Donations allow us to grow and expand projects like the CGSF app, and your contributions will make those a reality. Be awesome with us. Donate now at cjsf.ca/donate.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
This is an official state document essentially recommending the government to carry out an ethnic cleansing of Gaza. And it has been written in a time when these ideas are making their way into the Israeli mainstream public discourse and to Israeli media.
As the death toll from Israel's bombardment of Gaza tops 9,200, one Israeli government ministry is recommending the forcible transfer of the entire population of Gaza to Egypt. We'll speak to an Israeli journalist who helped expose the story. Then, as Secretary of State Tony Blinken visits Israel, we'll speak to Josh Paul. He recently resigned from his high-level State Department job, where he oversaw arms transfers to Israel and other foreign nations.
I resigned from the State Department 2 weeks ago because I believe that U.S. arms should never be used to commit gross violations of human rights or contribute to civilian casualties, and we know that's what's happening in Gaza today. I also resigned because I believe that for 20 years, we've pursued a dead-end policy which has not led to security for Palestinians or for Israelis. But when I tried to raise these issues within the State Department, there was absolutely no appetite for any debate.
Plus, we go to Boston, where 23 people were arrested Thursday as hundreds of faith leaders and clergy rallied to demand a ceasefire in Gaza. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's army says it's encircled Gaza City as international condemnation continues to grow over its 28-day assault on the besieged Palestinian territory, where more than 9,200 people have been killed, including at least 3,800 children. Among the dead and injured are Palestinians sheltering at a United Nations-run school in the Jabalia refugee camp, where at least 27 were killed in an Israeli strike Thursday.
Nowhere is safe. They even hit the school. They said flee to the schools. They then targeted the schools. Where are the Arab leaders?
A group of seven senior United Nations human rights experts warned Thursday, quote, time is running out to prevent genocide and humanitarian catastrophe, unquote. The Palestine News Agency reports journalist Mohammed Abu Hatab was killed in an Israeli strike on his home in the southern Gaza Strip on Thursday, along with 11 members of his family, including his wife, son, and brother. Abu Hatab was a reporter for Palestine TV. His last on-air report was about deadly Israeli airstrikes in and around his neighborhood in Khan Yunis. His colleague, journalist Salman al-Bashir, burst into tears during a live broadcast upon learning of Abu Hatab's killing. As he spoke, al-Bashir tore off his helmet and protective vest labeled press and threw them to the ground.
These are just slogans that we are wearing. They don't protect any journalists at all. These shields don't protect us.
Yeah.
We are victims, directly on live television. We are losing souls, one by one, with complete impunity.
Salman al-Bashir tore off his press gear, and the anchor who was talking to him also wept. According to the Committee to Protect Journalists, at least 36 reporters and media workers have been killed since the conflict erupted on October 7th. Israeli forces killed at least 9 more Palestinians during overnight raids in the occupied West Bank. One of the victims, Eham al-Shafei, was just 14 years old. Separately, another 14-year-old named Hamdan Omar Hamdan died Thursday of injuries sustained earlier this week from Israeli army gunfire. Elsewhere, settlers have attacked Palestinian homes and stores in the town of Deir Sharaf, near west of Nablus. The UN's Humanitarian Affairs Office warns vigilante-style settler attacks have killed 29 people across the West Bank this year. 145 West Bank Palestinians have been killed in Israeli attacks since October 7th. In Lebanon, Hezbollah fighters launched simultaneous attacks on 19 Israeli positions along Israel's border on Thursday, prompting Israel to respond with warplanes, helicopter gunships, artillery, and tank fire. At least 2 people in the Israeli town of Kiryat Shmona were wounded in the exchange of fire, the largest skirmish since Hamas's October 7th attack. The cross-border violence came as Hezbollah's leader Hassan Nasrallah is set to make his first public remarks today on Israel's assault on Gaza. In the United States, the House of Representatives has approved a $14.3 billion military aid package for Israel, largely along party lines. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says Democrats won't take up the bill after House Republicans excluded funding for Ukraine's military and proposed slashing IRS funding to pay for the weapons to Israel. President Biden has asked Congress for a $106 billion emergency spending package that includes funding for Israel, Taiwan, in Ukraine. The request includes an unprecedented provision to entirely waive congressional notification of the future sale of military equipment and weapons to Israel, including stocks of ballistic missiles and artillery shells. This is Vice President Kamala Harris speaking from London Thursday after talks with British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak.
We are not going to create any conditions on the support that we are giving Israel to defend itself.
The White House continues to rule out calls for a ceasefire in Gaza, a day after Biden said Israel's military should allow for humanitarian pauses. On Thursday, Illinois Democratic Senator Dick Durbin became the first member of the Senate to call for a ceasefire during an interview on CNN.
An effort should be made to engage in conversation between the Israelis and the Palestinians. Let's face it, this has gone on for decades. Whatever the rationale from the beginning, it has now reached an intolerable level.
Bahrain has called its ambassador, recalled its ambassador from Israel in response to the ongoing bombardment of Gaza. This follows rare protests in the Persian Gulf nation demanding the reversal of a diplomatic normalization agreement between Bahrain and Israel. Latin American governments have also intensified their condemnation of Israel's attacks, with Mexico, Peru, and Argentina all speaking out this week. On Thursday, the Chilean president, Gabriel Boric, sharply criticized U.S. support for Israel's assault after talks at the White House with President Biden.
We do not accept that we are made to choose between one side or the other. We choose humanity, and both these attacks by Hamas have no justification and deserve global condemnation. And what the government of Benjamin Netanyahu is doing today also deserves our clearest condemnation. Our clearest condemnation. The right of a state to defend itself has limits, and those limits are respecting the lives of innocent civilians, especially children, in international humanitarian law.
In Philadelphia, at least 350 people were arrested Thursday after hundreds of faith leaders and activists blocked a train terminal demanding state and local officials support a ceasefire in Gaza. Imams, rabbis, reverends, pastors, clerics, and Buddhist monks led the massive crowd in traditional songs and prayers, while hundreds more rallied outside 30th Street Station in Philadelphia. The peaceful action was organized by Philadelphia's chapter of Jewish Voice for Peace. In North Carolina, dozens of Palestinian solidarity protesters blocked a highway in Durham Thursday during rush hour as they chanted, "Ceasefire now." Here in New York, dozens of students walked out of a class at Columbia University taught by Hillary Clinton protesting the school's role in targeting Palestinian solidarity activists, they said. Wednesday's action came after photographs of students who signed a declaration critical of Israel's assault on Gaza were featured on doxing trucks parked near campus last week with the words "Columbia's leading anti-Semites." The group Accuracy and Media deployed similar doxing trucks at Harvard, at CUNY, and UPenn in Philadelphia. Later in the broadcast, we'll hear voices from a Palestinian rights protest in Boston, where at least 23 people were arrested. In upstate New York, Cornell University canceled classes today after a student was charged this week for posting violent anti-Semitic comments to a campus website and threatening to shoot up the school's kosher dining hall located at the Center for Jewish Living. This comes amidst a surge in anti-Semitic and anti-Muslim threats on college campuses across the United States since October 7th. In Arizona, more than 100 Jewish and Palestinian solidarity activists held a die-in protest blocking the main entrance to Raytheon's office in Tucson for over an hour Wednesday. Protesters condemned what they say is Raytheon's complicity in the genocide of Palestinians for supplying missiles, bombs, and weapon systems to Israel. Share prices of arms manufacturers, including Raytheon, have risen sharply since Israel began its assault on the Gaza Strip. Raytheon CEO Greg Hayes acknowledged in a recent earnings call his company stands to profit from increased arms sales to Israel and Ukraine.
Next tranche, the president's $100-plus billion request, which is more than $40 billion for Ukraine. What you're going to see is the same things that we have been seeing, but in much higher quantities. I think really across the entire Raytheon portfolio, you're going to see a benefit of this restocking on top of what we think is going to be an increase in the DOD top line.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has officially withdrawn Russia's ratification of the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. The U.S. has signed but never ratified the global agreement banning testing of nuclear weapons. Russia says it will not resume nuclear testing unless the U.S. does. The United Nations General Assembly has voted to condemn the United States embargo on Cuba for the 31st consecutive year. On Thursday, 187 countries voted in favor of lifting the decades-old sanctions. Only the U.S. and Israel voted against the motion. This is Cuba's foreign minister, Bruno Rodriguez.
El bloqueo viola el derecho a la vida.
The embargo violates the right of life, the right to health, and the right to education, and the well-being of all Cuban men and women. Our families feel the effects of this blockade through the fact that shops are lacking goods and there are long queues, as well as excessively high prices and low salaries.
Mexico's government has announced a $3.4 billion project to rebuild Acapulco a week after Hurricane Otis slammed into the Pacific Coast city as a Category 5 storm, leaving a trail of devastation. 46 people have been confirmed dead. Another 58 remain missing, though some local officials believe the true toll is high. Meanwhile, extreme weather has killed at least 12 people across France, Spain, Belgium, Germany, the Netherlands, and Italy. Storm Ciarán brought hurricane-force winds to southern England and France's northwestern coast before dumping record levels of rainfall on large swaths of Europe. This year remains on track to become Europe's hottest year since at least 1940. Here in New York, the FBI raided the Brooklyn home of Breonna Suggs, Mayor Eric Adams' chief fundraiser. Thursday's early morning raid came as part of a federal corruption investigation into whether Mayor Adams' 2021 campaign received illegal donations from Turkey. The raid prompted Adams to cancel a trip to Washington, D.C., U-turning after he was already en route. He sent an aide to attend meetings with White House officials and the mayors of Chicago and Denver over what he called the asylum seeker crisis. A Manhattan jury has found the disgraced founder of the fallen cryptocurrency exchange FTX guilty of defrauding customers and lenders. Sam Bankman-Fried faces up to 110 years in prison at a hearing scheduled for March, when he'll be sentenced for convictions ranging from wire fraud to money laundering. He faces another criminal trial in 2024 on charges he committed bank fraud and bribed Chinese officials. In Tennessee, a former Memphis police officer pleaded guilty Thursday to two felony charges in federal court for the beating death of Tyree Nichols, a 29-year-old black father. Video footage shows five police officers from the elite Scorpion unit brutally beating, tasing, and pepper spraying Nichols, who died 3 days later as part of a deal for his guilty plea. Desmond Mills Jr. will cooperate with state prosecutors in their separate cases against the officers, which include second-degree murder charges. And domestic abuse survivor Tracy McCarter is suing the city of New York and five New York City police officers for wrongful prosecution over her husband's death. Tracy McCarter, a nurse and grandmother, was holding a knife during a violent encounter with her abusive husband, who fell and impaled himself. McCarter called 911 and unsuccessfully administered first aid. New York police officers falsely claimed she confessed to intentional homicide, and she was sent to Rikers Jail to await trial on second-degree murder charges. The charges were eventually dismissed after a public pressure campaign and intervention from Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg. This is Tracy McCarter speaking at a press conference Thursday.
I just want for them to have accountability for all of the losses that followed. I wasn't able to work for 3 years. I missed the births of my grandchildren. I couldn't go to funerals of my grandmother, my aunt. You know, I lost a lot. And only 10 days before the trial was set to start, the charges were dismissed, even though I know the prosecutor knows that they didn't have a case.
To see our interview with Tracy McCarter, go to democracynow.org. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. The War and Peace Report coming up as the death toll from Israel's bombardment of Gaza tops 9,200. We'll look at how one Israeli government agency is proposing the forcible transfer of the entire population of Gaza to Egypt. Stay with us. Borders and Promises. Haya Zatri. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's facing growing international condemnation for its 28-day assault on Gaza. More than 9,200 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza over the past 4 weeks, including at least 3,800 children. This, according to the health ministry in Gaza. On Thursday, a group of UN experts released a statement to express their, quote, deepening horror over Israel's repeated air strikes on the Jabalia refugee camp, the largest in Gaza, that have killed at least 195 people in recent days. The group of experts said, quote, the Israeli airstrike on a residential complex in the Jabalia refugee camp is a brazen violation of international law and a war crime. Attacking a camp sheltering civilians, including women and children, is a complete breach of the rules of proportionality and distinction between combatants and civilians, they said. Residents in Jabalia say entire sections of the refugee camp have been leveled.
The area has been completely destroyed. There are no Hamas fighters here. These are all civilians. They are all innocent people. No resistance here. There was a bakery here and houses. One of them had 100 people inside, and another had 50 people. This is destruction. This is a war against God and His Prophet. It's a war of extermination.
As Israeli troops encircle Gaza City and intensify its aerial bombardment, there are growing questions over Israel's long-term plan for Gaza. One Israeli government office, the Israeli Ministry of Intelligence, has proposed the permanent transfer of Gaza's 2.3 million residents to Egypt's Sinai Peninsula. In a document dated October 14th, the small governmental body stated the forced displacement of Gaza civilians to Egypt would, quote, yield positive and long-term strategic results. It lays out a three-stage process, the establishment of tent cities in Sinai and the opening of a humanitarian corridor, followed by construction of permanent cities in northern Sinai and the creation of a, quote, sterile zone of several kilometers within Egypt, and says, quote, the return of the population to activities residences near the border with Israel should not be allowed, unquote. Many Palestinians in northern Gaza have refused to follow Israeli orders to vacate their homes out of fear they'll never be allowed back. It's unclear how Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu or his cabinet have responded to the proposals, but the Biden administration has publicly opposed plans for the mass transfer of Palestinians. Secretary of State Tony Blinken's in Israel today, where he's reportedly seeking a humanitarian pause to the bombing. Blinken is also planning to travel to Jordan, where he's expected to assure Jordan that the U.S. opposes transferring Palestinians to Egypt or Jordan. For more, we're joined by Yuval Abraham, an Israeli journalist based in Jerusalem who reports for Plus 972 magazine and Local Call. He helped expose this proposal in his piece headlined Expel All Palestinians from Gaza, Recommends Israeli Government Ministry. Yuval has also reported on the growing number of attacks on Palestinians by Israeli soldiers and settlers in the occupied West Bank. He joined us Wednesday during a rainstorm in Jerusalem. I asked him to talk about how he knows the document from the Israeli Ministry of Intelligence is real.
I know it's true because I have verified it in front of the intelligence ministry. And as you said, Amy, it's a document that essentially asks the question, what will happen to Gaza's civilian population after the war? And this intelligence ministry writes policy pieces and shares them with the defense establishment inside Israel. And I mean, as you have mentioned, the 10-page document goes quite into detail and explicitly recommends this process of forced transfer. It also recommends to frame it in front of the international community as a humanitarian necessity, as something that is better than the alternatives that it posits in the document, which is that the population will stay and die in their tens of thousands. Now, I think it's important to stress that this ministry is a small ministry. Despite its name, it does not actually deal with classified information, and it is not actually responsible for an Israeli intelligence organization. And it is not considered a very consequential or influential ministry in Israel. However, this is an official state document essentially recommending the government to carry out an ethnic cleansing of Gaza. And it has been written in a time when these ideas are making their way into the Israeli mainstream public discourse and to Israeli media. I think, Amy, you know, a lot of us, a lot of people in Israel are feeling shock. They feel a need that things will not return to the way they were before October 7th. They talk about security, especially after all of the atrocities that were committed by Hamas on October 7th and the people who were illegally kidnapped and taken to Gaza and the murders. And I think we have politicians who have no political vision for the future, and they are unfortunately using this sense of wanting security to commit horrible and terrible war crimes in Gaza and killing already more than 3,000 children. And I think this document and this bombing campaign are both a reflection of a worldview that only has force in its disposal to try and deal with a political problem. And the dangerous thing about this worldview is that it always fails. And when it fails, there are calls to use more force and more force. And if you push this worldview to the extreme, you will eventually end up with ideas like the ideas that we are reading about in this document. And that's why, and this is the final thing that for now that I would say, that's why, you know, as an Israeli, it's very, very important for me to stress that I don't think we can have security if Palestinians do not have freedom. And if we do not have a long-term political vision for the future that will end the situation where I have rights and freedom of movement and a way to vote, and Palestinians who are living next to me don't, we are not going to have security. And I am very worried that, you know, I feel that this war on Gaza will not bring us security, and it will end even if we topple down Hamas. By killing so many Palestinian civilians, we will create the next Hamas, and I think this killing is unjustifiable. And I worry that the next war will come, and they will say, you know, it didn't work, now we have to use even more force, and even more force. And even though this document right now might not seem feasible, I think this is the dangerous route that we are currently in. And this is why it's so important to contextualize things and talk about a long-term political solution to the problem. And our leaders are not doing that right now.
Yuval, can you talk about where this document comes from, who it went to, and how real it is?
Yes. So this document came from the intelligence ministry, which has a very small budget, and it seems like they have initiated it. They usually send out their documents to the Israeli different government offices and to intelligence organizations and the Israeli security establishments.
So can you talk about what it means to have exposed it and how they're responding?
Yeah, you know, for me, this is very, very worrying and troubling because the government has not really acknowledged the paper at all. And none of us really know what the end game of the government is in Gaza. I think in Israeli media, it has been downplayed as something that is going to harm Israel's legitimacy for the war abroad. A lot of people are not taking it very seriously. This ministry is not considered, as I said, a very influential ministry. But we did not hear any clear and cut rejection of the document by the government.
Can you explain what the right-wing Israeli Misgav Institute is, who has a similar proposal?
Sure, yeah, it's a very interesting and strange story. So this right-wing think tank called Misgav, which is headed by Mayor Ben Shabbat, who was, he's a very close associate with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and he's a very senior former Israeli security figure. And they published a little over 2 weeks ago a report that has the same identical conclusion, that Israel needs to forcibly transfer all the civilians in Gaza to Egypt. And this report was authored and written by Amir Weitman, who is also a Likud member and an associate of Gila Gamliel, which is the Likud member who heads the Ministry of Intelligence, who wrote a report with the same conclusions. Now, these connections between the Likud and the right-wing think tank are also apparent because a month ago, the Ministry of Intelligence has hired this Misgav Institute to carry out research as a freelancer for the government ministry. Now, officially, the Ministry of Intelligence, you know, I've spoken to sources there. They're claiming, you know, this document, we completely stand behind the recommendation and we authored it independently. If you ask me, it's very clear that there is a mix here between the government ministry and this extreme right-wing think tank. And it all seems to be coming back to different sorts of officials in the ruling party, the Likud.
And what about the role of Egypt? Earlier this month, Egypt's president, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, said he would reject the forced displacement of millions of Palestinians into Sinai, which is Egypt. This is what he said.
Egypt rejects any attempt to resolve the Palestinian issue by military means or through the forced displacement of Palestinians from their land, which would come at the expense of the countries of the region. The idea of displacement of Palestinians from the Gaza Strip to Egypt simply means that a similar situation will occur by the displacement of Palestinians from the West Bank to Jordan. This means that the idea of a Palestinian state that we are discussing and that the international community is discussing will no longer be possible.
So that's what President Sisi said, the Egyptian president. And this just came in from Ynet. Middle East Eye reported on the Israeli news outlet saying, Israel's proposing writing off a significant chunk of Egypt's international debts through the World Bank to entice the cash-strapped Abdel Fattah el-Sisi government to open its doors for displaced Palestinians. Again, that's according to the Israeli Ynet news site. Yuval.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's clear that the fact that Egypt is refusing to open its borders is one of several reasons why this forced transfer plan will not manifest. You know, I think that it is a feasible scenario if they do open their borders and tens or hundreds of thousands of Palestinians leave Gaza, that at least